Tim Gibson is the winner of an X-Corps suborbital prize competition. And if all goes according to plan, he's going to go into space. He told us about it last week. He was speaking at a meeting of the Space Association in Oakley. And after giving his presentation, which we broadcast last week, and that is now, by the way, online, and you can go to it, he answered questions from the audience. Now, because the questions were inaudible, I'm going to read them here in the studio, but you'll hear Tim's actual responses. Now, Tim, what is the time frame of your flight?
So the time frame for this, I've got to do a complete a psychological assessment, and if I can complete the military one that they put me through and the very interesting questions they asked me, that I'm sure I'll be okay. I've got to do a full medical, which is the same as a class one aviation medical. I have a class two medical. Class one only requires an ECG. Do that as part of my military assessment, so I know I'll be okay with that. And then I've got to do one more centrifuge run just to make sure it's still good to go when I get close to the flight, and the flight will be around the first quarter of 2016. Deepwater aviation to space, everything is delayed, so probably 2018.
How many flights will you make?
It's for one flight. So myself and whoever the test pilot will be, the guinea pig, as they keep calling me. But it's going to be fun, I'm sure.
What's the difference between the Mark 1 and the Mark 2 X-Corps spaceship?
So the Mark 1 only goes to about 63 kilometres in altitude. It's not into space. In fact, I don't actually know why they developed that and not the 2. I believe from what I hear, it's purely just a tester to make sure that the technology works and to get that initial interest and that initial process into getting people into space. But the Mark 2 is actually the one that will go beyond the Kármán line.
The Kármán line is 100 kilometres altitude above which you are officially in space. Now, aiming for 103 kilometres is cutting it a bit fine. Do you have a guarantee that you actually get over 100 kilometres?
Oh, I better have a money-back guarantee if I don't, because I want to get over that 103. The altimeter, I've just got to wait for that 338,000 feet. Sticks around. I can keep my space suit then, which will be really cool. And get a nice patch, hopefully get a tie. Buzz Aldrin's tie, actually, I asked him about this, and I said, that is the coolest tie I've ever seen. Where do I get that? And he goes, I got it from the gift shop at NASA. And then we're in this photo shoot, as you can see here, and there's some media in the background. And I said, that's a cool tie, he said, from the gift shop. And then he goes, oh, Tim, wait. Pulls up his socks, and he goes, check out these socks. I got these from the gift shop too. These were on special. This is great. Here's a man on the moon, and we're joking about gift shop clothing. It's a very, very good guy. Buzz had a good joke with him and a beer. He's a really nice fellow.
You've had to meet stringent medical requirements. What about the regular tourists who are going to follow?
Same sort of thing. So the FAA requires, if you're going to go on one of these things, you must prove to them that you're capable of withstanding the G-force. You must prove to them you're capable of withstanding motion sickness and the mental elements of that as well. So that's why they go through the psych. That's why you do the 3G in the centrifuge, and that's why you do the fighter flying. I'm not sure if they need to do the fighter flying, but I know that they've got to do a centrifuge, a medical, and a psych exam.
Do you have to do this medical test before or after you've paid for the flight into space?
From what I understand, you pay the US$5,000 deposit, and then it's on you to complete those tests. They obviously help and arrange all that for you. Whether or not you get that deposit back if you fail, I'm unsure. Be a good question for them. I wouldn't want to spend $5,000 and go through a centrifuge and fail.
One of the competitors in this business is Virgin Galactic. What are the requirements for the Virgin Galactic flights?
Same sort of thing, except they don't require the centrifuge because really it's... I mean, they're already at 40,000 feet or I think 30,000 feet or whatever they're at before they actually launch, drop the vehicle, and then it accelerates up. And they're also passengers, so they're in the rear capsule, and you know they'll get to unbuckle and float around the place before, after 6 minutes, they quickly strap back in and they come through the atmosphere. So all I understand from the galactic point of view is the psych still applies and the medical still applies.
What about insurance? And who pays for it?
So I've signed the waiver that says you are likely to die. There's no insurance.
No
insurance for me. They're not willing to insure. The form clearly states US law does not have this as a, I can't remember the wording they use, but just a succinct mode of travel. It's a high-risk experimental mode of travel. You can't be insured. There's no insurance policy. I mean, I'm sure it would cost an arm and leg anyway. And basically, you understand that there is a likelihood of being killed. Adventure. But they're purely, it's okay, using previous examples of space travel. So 1 in 36 chance of being killed currently just as the statistics lie. But obviously as we increase and we go forth with private enterprise of the space travel, those odds will get better and better, I can assure you. It'll be fine. And to Mum, if she's going to be listening to this as well.
What's your attitude towards all of this?
It's all surreal because I just feel, to me, I mean, I don't like to talk it up. It's cool, it's space, right? But at the end of the day, I don't consider it the be-all and end-all of everything because I still have to earn a crust for a living and I've still got to work in a hotel. But I walk down the street and I walk to these events and I see people at aviation seminars and they come up to me and say, oh, you're that guy that's going to space, aren't you? And you think, oh, yeah, that's right, I am. I forgot about that. Which it's very, very weird and surreal.
Is there any reason why you are wearing Guantanamo orange during training?
I get that question a lot. I've got three spacesuits. There's a zero G. It's a navy blue flight suit. I've got the grey training suit, which has got all the patches and names and the cool stuff and the pockets for pens. And then when Buzz announced the winner, that was the presentation. So you get your platinum ticket and you get this suit here, Lynx, which is the LSA there, the craft, and the word winner, which is just in this patch here. So that's the winner's suit. It is a Guantanamo suit. I feel like a prisoner every time I wear it, and particularly when some Griffith University was doing a photo shoot with them the other day, made me wear that, and that same sort of joke, are we filming prison escapes or are we filming someone who's going on X Corps? So it's pretty cool. It's very nicely fitted and very warm as well.
Where is the X Corps launch site?
Yes, they're required to go over water, Curacao. So just south of Florida, north of Venezuela, a little island community owned by the US called Curacao, like Blue Curacao, Curacao, the drink that you have. That's where we'll be launching from. There's also the Mojave Desert platform, and it could be one of those two. So they're still toying up and wondering which one they're going to use yet.
Where do the X-Corps people plan to develop their business into the future?
So the way that they're building it, they've got plans for the launch of microsatellites into orbit. They want to use this as the vehicle to do that. They also want to use it as a vehicle to conduct experiments, either designated through private enterprise or through government. And they're looking, all secrets and hush-hush, of course, Mark 3, which will be that catalyst. So Lynx 2 is the stepping stone to the Lynx 3, the Mark 3, and that will be the one that will launch the microsatellites into orbit, and they're really counting on that. So whilst it's the hype and they're generating the marketing and they're pushing the, look, you can buy a ticket, it's going to be fantastic, it's going to be a lot of fun, that's the next part is, and they've just won $142 million of investment, I believe it was, still yet to be announced, on top of the other investment round they just had. So they're really pushing for that dropping satellites into orbit angle.
We don't hear as much about X-Corps as we do about Virgin Galactic. How far advanced is the construction of the X-Corps spaceship?
They release emails to me in two formats. One that says your information non-release and for public release, and I've signed the dotted form that says I lose that suit if I say certain things. But one of the things that was recently, they showed me the cone, so the front of the craft that's fully built, and to most people, it just looks like a shell of metal. To me, it looks really awesome because this is what I'll be going in. This is the shell. So they've built that shell, and they're putting it through basic structural testing at the moment. And this is the Mark II, so the Mark is pretty much done, but this is the Mark II. And, that's very exciting. But other stuff, press releases to come. Very exciting.
How much carry-on luggage are you allowed? And will it be security screened?
Well, it depends what the FAA say. I mean, CAS has helped over this side of town. How much carry-on baggage? Well, if Jetstar allows 10 kilos, I dare say they're going to max out at 10 kilos as well. And I recently heard, actually, I think it was Tiger, or was it Jetstar? One of the airlines are doing the same model in the US where they have the people that are going to wait for you at the gate and go, can you just come here, I'm just going to weigh this for you, just to make sure that you're not skimping out on our excess luggage charges. They do that haphazardly at the moment, so that might happen as well, but hopefully not. Hopefully, I just hope that they won't have so many cameras, according to 60 Minutes and Today Tonight and all those rubbish mobs, in front of me that I won't actually be able to see out the front window. So we'll see what happens with that.
Now, Tim, do you know which flight you'll be on?
No idea. It's going to be a bit of a lottery. I've pushed my contacts in X-Corps to the best I can to try and be number one, because there'd be nothing better than just going, hey, I was number one. Gibson. Australia, yes. What's above Australia? Nothing. Austria, but Afghanistan. No one from Afghanistan going on this, unfortunately. That'd be the logic, but the adventure part of me goes, no, you want to be the first one.
Would you prefer to fly on a vehicle that has had 10,000 hours of flight experience or one that's just come out of the factory?
You want my honest answer?
Yes.
Just out of the factory.
You must be kidding.
Yeah. I'd love that.
Logic.
It does defy logic, but again, the adventure side of my brain that says, give it a crack.
Who organised the competition that you entered and who financed it?
Unilever. Unilever own pretty much everything. They probably own this whole room. Unilever, the deodorant company Lynx, funded this as a marketing promotion worldwide to attract more people to the deodorant market, the men's deodorant market. So buying the Lynx deodorant cans and going to space and the ladies in bikinis on the ads, that's all part of their promotion. It's interesting they've taken a massive twist away from the whole bikinis and Lynx and astronauts. They're actually going the war and peace theme, so they're really pushing peace. You know, deodorant's a lovely thing. You want to wear it. And I said that two more times. That'll pay for my cab home tonight. Yeah, so they paid for the whole thing. So Unilever, Lynx paid everything. And I'd hate to imagine the amount of coin dropped in on this, because what they did over there, I mean, it's not just what you see and what I've just said, that little things like, oh, some people were cold, or so they went out to the local Walmart and bought a bunch of blankets. There was a buffet of food, 24 hours a day you could help yourself to. There was a police force designated just to our area to protect us. I don't know from what, though, Martians. There were paramedics there. It was a full camp set up. I was looking at this camp going, I'd hate to think of the amount of money that they've just put in on this and hope that they get a return on investment. But at least I'm getting my return on 9 Lynx cans. It's the best $30 I've spent.
How did you find out about the competition to go into space with X-Core?
In Yeppoon, which is where I was living at the time, which is central Queensland, it's a little old sleepy town, not much happens in Yeppoon. So you really watch television or you look outside, there's not much to look out at night time except for stars. And it happened to be a cloudy night that night, so that's why I was watching TV and that's why I saw the ad.
Were there any other Australians competing?
Four in that contingent. Two I was worried about, but then, again, that Matt Hall part of me said, don't look at them, just focus on your own game plan. One was a professional diver. He was very fit and very motivated. And the other one I was worried about was an electrician. Didn't know anything about avionics or airspace or space at all, but he was incredibly fit and motivated as well. So they were my biggest competition. The other guy, Will, is sort of just, oh, sweet, I've got a free ticket to the US. Just happened to win it, I think.
Is it on the cards that X-Core will develop an orbital vehicle?
Definitely on the cards. All I hear them talk about is when they get to the Mark III stages in the future, probably 5-10 years down the track, that's also the aim, it's to go orbital. And I don't know, I talked about with Michael about this. Is that a catalyst to quick travel? Is that a catalyst to get from here to London in a couple of hours? And they're all saying, yeah, of course, you know, what else would it be? Who knows what rocket fuel prices will be by then, or if there's another way we can do a scramjet or something, I'm not sure. But very, very interesting where they could potentially go with this.
For how long are you contracted to X-Core? And do you have any obligations after your flight into space?
My contract finishes the second I land.
That's it.
Second I land, then I'm just book deals and just doing all this. But the second I land, I don't have to keep everything close to my chest anymore. It's open slather from there. I can show you the real party pics at Michael. The real buzz pics after the jacket comes off. When the tie comes off, that's what really happens. Yeah, show us socks, exactly.
And we've been listening to Tim Gibson, the winner of the X-Core Prize for going on a suborbital flight. And he was speaking at the meeting of the Space Association of Australia in Oakley. And that's the sort of thing that you can hear at the association meetings. The next one being tomorrow evening at the Oakley RSL. So rock up about 8:30 or so, and you can be part of that. Of course, if you're a member of the association, you might want to rock up earlier because there's the AGM at 7:30.